TalkingTrading.com.au is your weekly fix podcast of share market expert interviews. Our team of experts will help you make the right decisions about what, when, and where to trade. Let's get cracking.
Hello and welcome. Today we're going to revisit two of my favourite interviews from mentors Louise Bedford and Chris Tate. Time is ticking. Are you always running short of time? Best-selling author Louise Bedford joins us to give us some great advice on time management. She tells us how to avoid those nasty time leaks and how to make sure we get the most out of our days. You want to excel in the share markets, but you're having trouble getting off the couch? Well, Chris Tate will goad your butt into action. He takes us through some crucial psychological aspects to trading, which lead you towards the life you want to live and not the life others might expect from you. He tells us how to think about the system and, even better, how to beat it. Sick of being the smartest person in the room? Tell your friends about the Talking Trading podcast and let them come to the party too. TalkingTrading.com.au. Do you suspect you waste time during your day but you can't quite pinpoint where? How do we make the most out of our days and our trading? Well, Louise Bedford joins us now to give us some great advice on time management. Louise, hello and welcome.
Caroline, good to be talking to you.
How can traders not be overwhelmed with all the information out there?
Look, I think a lot of it comes down to attitude. I think that one of the things that you need to do as a trader is to embrace that your needs must be put above everybody else's. And I know that goes contrary to what a lot of people believe about, you know, being nice to others and playing with others prettily. But frankly, it's the only way to get ahead. The truth of the matter is that we do have enough time to do everything that we really, really want. It's just that we have to make sure that those things are ticked off that priority list. We often lack integrity with our own time.
What do you mean by that, integrity with our time?
Look, I think that time management is related to personal integrity. You know, like with personal integrity, it's where you do what you say you're going to do. And that is a principle that I think is really a guiding light in my own life. There's a book actually about this called The Phenomenal Secret of Forgotten Success. It's a top little book, and if you get a copy of it, I know you'll love it. That's the premise behind that book. Now, with time management, the thing that I feel time integrity leads me to believe is that you're honouring commitments that you've made to yourself. Now, Lee Miltier, who's an authority on time management, came out with this term initially. It's going back 15 years when I first heard the term. And I think it's a really good one. Honouring your own commitments to yourself is really a key. And it's not just in trading, it's in any part of life.
What about those situations where you don't even know what you've been doing for the last, say, half hour? I kind of think of it like a time leak. How do you suggest we avoid those?
Oh, isn't it the way? Actually, there's that concept called the white line phenomenon where you're driving and you're going white line, white line, white line, and all of a sudden you're home and you think, how did I ever make it home? It's almost like a subconscious driver kicks into place. I think with time leaks, often we're focusing on things in the future. Now, women are totally apt to do this. My friend Dr. Harry Stanton tells me that 90% of the things that women are worried about are in the future, which is interesting. Unfortunately, I can relate with that. If you actually just look at what's happening here and now, instead of focusing on worries and anxieties that drain your energy, that can really help. One of the things that I just love doing is to have a focus day. Have you heard of those before?
No, I haven't. Tell us about them.
What you do is you set your family up or your employees or whoever you're with, you set them up to say, look, on this particular day, I'm going to have a focus day. I won't be contactable by email. I won't be able to have a phone on. It's just my day to focus on one project. You can really move mountains if you have a focus day regularly. I have a focus day once a week on a Tuesday, and it is spectacular. I don't get any phone calls. I even just flick off the internet. I know that sounds like sacrilege, but it works like a charm. And I get done the things I need to do, whether it be like a trading plan review or learning about a new trading instrument, or maybe even for me, because I'm a mentor, talking with my people that I'm mentoring over the phone. And that's my total focus. You know, everyone has only 1,440 minutes a day. And it's how you use them that really, really counts.
Any other tips to help people with their trading?
Yeah, that is a good one. One of the things I hear people say, and not just traders, I mean, just generally in life, is that I don't have time for that. You know, if you constantly say, I don't have time for that, what happens is your subconscious hears that and it turns that over and then it goes, hey, I really don't have time for that. You're actually feeding back the thing that you don't want to occur. So I'd prefer people say, it's just not a priority for me at the moment. And it's probably much more honest. I even say that with my traders. Don't tell your kids, I don't have enough money for that. We can't afford that. Say, look, it's just not a priority for me at the moment. And that is actually really good because you're not feeding back the negativity. Some of the other things that I think work out well for people is to first of all find out where you're wasting your time. Now, if you can keep a time diary and just go, okay, you know, this is how I spent my time today, that can be a really eye-opening phenomenon. And then you can create goals. So little goals, say, okay, for the next 20 minutes, I'm going to concentrate on this one thing and not do anything else. That is an amazingly productive concept. And the other thing that you can do, I think, is a little trick that I use is whenever you set an appointment, set an end time. Make sure people know that, okay, so we've got a 2 o'clock appointment today, but then say, okay, but I will be needing to go at 2:45. Have you ever tried that, Caroline?
I don't think I have, and I tell you, I will be as soon as I leave today.
Yeah, it's a good one. It really keeps people on track and it stops all of that small talk, because sometimes it's hard to know when to stop small talk, isn't it?
Louise, they often say that a well-phrased question is a problem half solved. What sort of questions should we be asking ourselves to stay on track with time?
Oh, look, in my little office, I've got a tiny little office that I go for my focus day, my Tuesdays. I've actually got a whiteboard there. And it's got a few questions on there, and these are winners because I see them as soon as I walk in. The first one is, what is the most productive and profitable use of my time right now? Now, I find that to be a fascinating question because you want it to not only be productive, but also to create money on the other side of that. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, when you're with your kids, you're trying to think about money, but when you're thinking about money, hey, you should be thinking about money. And I think that is a real key. And another one is what is the payoff for doing what I'm doing right now? Now, if you're looking to study and you're looking to develop your skills in a particular area, maybe you're going for an MBA, that payoff is of course, the qualification. But a lot of the time, we're not even thinking of payoffs with our time. And I think that's just a tragedy. And perhaps the other one that my cheeky systems tester, Scott Lowther, popped up on my board, the same whiteboard, is he said KISS, which is keep it simple, stupid. Mm. So that is a good reminder for me. I tend to overcomplicate things, and to break things down into little sub-goals I think can really be of assistance, Caroline.
Working with the mentorees in your program, are there any time management lessons you can share with us about them?
They have taught me so much about time management. We've actually even had time management specialists do the mentor program, and they've later become moderators for the alumni, the graduate program that we run. So it's been interesting to learn from my students just as much as they're learning from me. One of the mentorees was actually telling me what he does is he sets a stopwatch. So if he's giving himself, say, half an hour for whatever it is that he's doing, he actually sets a stopwatch and he works to time. And then after the stopwatch bleeps off, he gives himself a little reward. I actually do it as well now. And so that's really been good. Like, I give myself a little reward of getting a nice cup of tea. Now, you could probably get yourself a nice glass of red wine if it was at the right time of the day and then get nothing else done after that. But as long as you're rewarding yourself as you go along, I think that's really important.
Louise, thanks so much for your insights today. They were very inspiring.
Thanks, Caroline.
Most traders act like a little kid in the markets. They don't know that a great trading plan is their secret weapon.
Isn't it time you grew the f*** up? Register on tradinggame.com.au and grab our free trading plan template. It's a sign of being a mature trader.
Want to live the life of freedom trading can offer, but you're having trouble getting off the couch? Well, who better than expert trader Chris Tate to goad your butt into action and take us through some of the important psychological aspects to trading the markets? Chris, how can we become more efficient traders?
One of the great problems traders face is that we're sort of bombarded by sort of rubbish from the financial media. The interesting thing about the financial media is how little they actually know about trading. It's quite remarkable that they can write so comprehensively on a subject they know nothing about. It's a little bit like me writing tomes on 17th century French literature, of which I have no knowledge whatsoever. Within trading, there's a few things that work and a few things that don't work. And as I somewhat sarcastically tell people when they ask me, you know, what's the secret of trading, I say, look, it's really, really simple. If something's going up over the time frame you trade, you buy it. If something's going down over the time frame in which you trade, you sell it, and you don't bet the farm. The intriguing thing is that people do exactly the opposite. They buy things that are going down, they sell things that are going up, because that is comfortable to them. That's really, really comfortable to buy something you think is cheap and to sell something you think is expensive.
It's also the man in the street's way of thinking how to work the share market.
It is actually. It's one of those things, you need to think of it from their perspective. Let's think of it this way. If I went down the milk bar to buy a litre of milk, and let's say on Monday it's $2, and I go back on Wednesday and it's $5, you think, I'm being ripped off, I'm going to go somewhere else. Think of this in the context of a share. If you buy a share 1 week and it's $2, and at the end of the week it's $5, the temptation is to sell it because you think it's become too expensive, when in actual fact you should be buying more. And this is the difficulty of trading. The great successful traders have learned how to perform one action and one action very, very well. And that action is quite simply this. They are pigs. When something is moving in their direction, that is, they've got a position and it's moving, they continue to buy more and more and more and more and more. And they keep going until it ends. And so they have this plow-in mentality. Whereas the man in the street, their approach to trading is, I bought something at a dollar, it's gone to $1.10, I've made 10%, I'll sell it because I'm only getting 2% in the bank, so I've done really, really well. Whereas what the professional trader would say is, I bought it at a dollar, it's gone to $1.10, I'm going to buy more. When it goes to $1.20, I'll buy more, and $1.30, I'll buy more, and $1.40, I'll buy more, and I'll continue to buy more right up until the time it starts to go down, and I'll sell it.
Okay, so when do you sell it?
When it hits your stop. And it's really as simple as that. It really is when it crosses that line in the sand that you have that says, this is the maximum loss I am willing to absorb, you simply sell it. It's a little bit like explaining driving to someone. Driving's really simple. Keep up. Don't bang into the person next to you. Green means go. Red means stop. And all you need to know is you stop on the red ones. And you don't need to know why you stop. You just need to know that you have to. So it's that very, very functional way of thinking. It's very mechanistic. And one of the problems we face, though, is that people are tremendously averse to selling something they own, particularly if they're selling it at a loss, because this says to them they've made a mistake.
Okay, so that brings me to my next question about stop losses. How hard is it to stick to your stop loss, no matter what?
It is one of the most profoundly hard things to do in trading.
Why is that?
It's simply because it's such a psychological endeavour. You don't want to admit that you're wrong. Let me put this in context. Pre the GFC, there was a stock called Babcock & Brown. Babcock & Brown was touted as the next Macquarie Bank. It was a financial institution. And at the time of the GFC, just before the GFC, they were around $33. They fell 99% to 30 cents. There would be people who bought them at $30 who were holding them at 30 cents because they could not admit that they were wrong. It's just impossible for them to do so. They can't get over that psychological hump that in trading, you are often wrong. Things go wrong. You can't control the market. I know a lot of people think that through cheerleading and sheer force of will and their super psychic powers, that they can somehow control the market, but you can't. And so there comes a time when you've got to go, I was wrong, let's move on. And because we all have our egos invested in decisions and we're very emotional creatures, we struggle to actually do that. And one of the problems with trading is that it has very few real rules that apply to the trader, but there is one. No money, no play.
Okay, so let's just summarise your main points. When the profits are running, run with them. Be a pig, get your snout in the trough, and go as high as you can go.
Correct.
When the tide turns and the profits drop, turn into losses,
run.
Run at your stop loss.
Run as far as you possibly can. You need to live to fight another day, and that's the issue. If you've got no money, you can't play. If you've got money, you can play.
Thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks, Caroline.
That's all we have for you today. Stay tuned next week for Australia's number one NLP brain untrainer, Rick Schnabel. He gives us techniques and methods to move beyond negative self-talk and live a life without limits. I love this guy. I'm Caroline Stephen. See you next week.
Talking Trading is brought to you by tradinggame.com.au. Make sure you're registered on tradinggame.com.au to receive your free 5-part e-course called The Share Market, Your Unfair Advantage. It'll give you exactly what you need so that you can trade confidently and safely with veteran traders Chris Tate and Louise Bedford by your side.
The views represented on Talking Trading are general in nature and do not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Before acting on any information, consider its appropriateness in regard to your own situation.